Hi, Ronnie. This is Casey Kasem in Hollywood. I know you're doing a special today with Diane Renee, and I just wanted to call and wish you both the very best.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very special, special that I'm doing. Welcome everybody to Diane, Renee, and Friends. And before I welcome any of the friends, welcome the guest of honor and the star of the show. Diane, Renee, are you there?
I'm here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. We were on WBCB. It was about 18 months ago that you and I were doing a show together here. And how have you been? You're still living in Las Vegas, right?
Still living in Las Vegas.
45 years ago, you started taking vocal lessons with somebody pretty well known in vocal teaching. Who was that?
His name was Artie Singer.
Right.
And I started taking lessons with him when I was around between 11 and 12 years old.
Right.
And Artie wrote and produced Danny and the Juniors at the Hop and a lot of other recording artists that came out of the Philadelphia area.
Right.
So he was the guy who put the bug in my head one day after a lesson. He says, you know, when you get older, you should really consider cutting a record.
Right.
Well, that's all I had to hear, and I drove my mother and father crazy until they decided to pay a local band to go into a studio and cut a demo with me and to see if I had any talent. To get it over with, so they didn't know one way or the other whether I should pursue this or leave them alone, you know.
Right. Well, we are going to just remind our listeners of what At the Hop sounded like. It was a really big hit back in the 50s. Just hear a few bars of that to hear a little bit of Artie Singer.
Right.
Of his record, actually. He's not singing on this. He's playing the bass on this, believe it or not.
Are you kidding? Really?
No, he is. And he's also playing some piano on it, too.
Yeah.
Everybody together. You can rock and you can roll it through the stop and the evening. Okay, in fact,
I remember dancing to this song at Record Hop. Oh, my God.
Oh, they were big. Well, Diane, here's the first surprise of the day. A couple of weeks ago, I met Artie Singer face-to-face, in person.
Are you serious?
I am serious. I am. My nose is not growing. And here's what he had to say.
Who are some of the people that you've taught?
Well, I have to categorize my two star pupils. Nail is Bobby Rydell, and of course, Diane Renee. I've just sensed, let me just quickly delve
into
why I told her what I did with when she was 12 years old. You have potential for recording. The reason I've decided that, and this was after one hearing, I think, or after the audition, it seemed apparent that her sound was very fitting for that time of the music business.
Well, that's coming from a man who is very well respected.
That's amazing. That, you know, it's like going all that way back 40-some years. Oh, we don't even want to say that.
No. We don't want to do that. But
right.
he told me that one of the songs you did during your vocal lessons was Zing Went the Strings of My Heart. And by the way, that is on your brand new double CD. It's actually not brand new, but it's been out a few months. It's called Some Things Old and Some Things New. Technically, it's Diane Renee Sings Some Things Old and Some Things New with an anchor in there. And
right.
It's on your website, www.dianerenay.com, DianeRenay.com. This is the last track on the first of the two CDs. Zing Went the Strings of My Heart. Here it is. went the strings of my heart. And that is Diane Renee. Diane, that's a great sound.
That brings back so many memories to me. The guys that were singing my background, we were all friends. All, you know, they were a little older than me, maybe 13, 14 years old. And we used to just hang out on the corner on a weekend night in South Philly where I used to live. And we would sing the latest shoo-op song.
Is anybody on the phone with me?
Hello.
Oh, my goodness, this is a strange voice. Do you recognize this voice, Diane?
Hello, Diane.
Who is that?
Who is this?
This is a man you used to know, like about, did I say 45 years ago?
Oh, my God.
Oh, we're not that old. Come on.
Oh, my God. Is this Artie Singer?
It's Artie Singer. How
oh
are you?
Oh, my God.
How's my pretty
it.
Little young lady there?
Oh, my. This is too amazing. It's like reliving my life all over again.
As we speak, Diane, I have your picture and your CD right in front of me. It's really been wonderful listening to it. Look at your beautiful face again.
Oh, thank you.
How's everything going for you?
Very well. Thank you for asking.
Good.
I hope you're doing well, too.
Yes, hanging in there, you know, as the
right.
old saying goes.
Well, listen, Artie,
yes.
I thank you so much for calling in, and this is a big surprise.
Well, I wouldn't miss this, of course. You know.
And we're going to make sure that you get a copy of the CD of this show, and we really appreciate it. I'll put you in touch with Diane after the show if you'd like to say a little bit more to her. Is that
positively.
Okay?
Positively.
Okay. Thank you so much, Artie, for calling
thank
in.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Artie Singer. Diane, we're back to Earth
wow.
here.
That's just amazing. I can't believe it.
We got to move forward, of course, because we have so many people appearing on the show. Listen to this sound. It's pretty distinctive.
You to me are sweet as roses in the morning. You to me are soft as summer rain at dawn and love we share.
That is my friend from a long time ago, Eddie Rambeau, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, he's on a cruise. He couldn't join us. We're going to move to the next on. No, I'm only kidding. I'm coming. Wait. Actually, he couldn't join us live, but I did talk to Eddie a few weeks ago. That record that you just heard, Concrete and Clay, by Eddie Rambeau, came about a year after your hit, Navy Blue. And Eddie is the co-writer of Navy Blue, along
Eddie
with...
Eddie was the co-writer of Navy Blue, Kiss Me Sailor, and several other songs that were on my original LP.
The Navy Blue LP. Who did he write Navy Blue with?
He wrote Navy Blue with Bud Rehak and Bob Crew, and I was sitting there while they were writing the song.
And they wrote it especially for you,
they
right?
They wrote it just for me, yes.
Okay,
yes.
I asked him about it.
Bob came flying into the office and said, I have a session with Diane Renee, and it's in about 20 minutes, it starts downstairs. He said, I need a fourth song for the date. They always used to do four sides for a single session. So he said, I got this title, Navy Blue. He said, and he grabbed me and Bud, pushed us into this little small room with a piano, and within 5 or 10 minutes, we had the entire song completed. He raced out the door down the session, and hence Navy Blue.
That quick?
That quick.
I guess Diana, a day or two later, did the vocals, right?
I think so. I'm not sure now. I'm up in age. I can't remember half of my life.
But you didn't base this on any true story. I mean, she didn't know any sailor boys or anything.
No, not at all.
Just total figment of Bob Crew's imagination, at least for the title. And then you kind of took it from there. All right, now, this is a sore point. There's a portion of this song that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, maybe you can explain it a little bit. You're talking about a guy who's in Tokyo. He sends her a letter from Tokyo and a walkie-talkie wind-up little China doll, but that's coming from Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
Then the last verse, you're saying, he's coming home to see me on a weekend pass, a 48-hour day eight, as she sings it.
Mm-hmm.
That boat he's sailing on just better get here fast. Because I can hardly wait.
Well, it was a jet boat.
It must have been a Concorde jet boat.
It was a jet boat. Well, remember one thing. I was all of 19 years old, and the song was written in 6 minutes.
Oh,
what do you want?
You had an excuse. You were 19, and it was written in 6 minutes.
That's it.
So you really didn't care if the song made any sense.
Exactly.
Well, can I suggest one thing? The letter that she got from Tokyo was actually mailed 2 weeks earlier.
There you go.
So he had 2 weeks.
San Diego at the time.
That's right. So he ended up from San Diego, and it was easy to get on that fast boat and make it home.
We have to put that with footnotes every time they buy the record.
I'm
Diane Renee. Diane!
Yes.
You still love that song after all these years?
I think I'm going to be wearing a sailor hat until the day that I die, because it's like, it's, wherever I go, it's like following me,
it's
on
your,
my head.
Your legacy.
You know?
It is your legacy. And you know something? Eddie Rambeau had something to say about you.
I have met a lot of people in this business, a tremendous amount of people in show business, singers, writers, you know, right down the line, artistic people from you know, every echelon. But I want to say that Diane Renee is absolutely one of the sweetest, most wonderful people I have ever had the opportunity to be with or meet in the business. She is just a marvelous girl. Unbelievable. She's a talent, and not only is she talented, but she has a lot of personality and a lot of love and kindness and goodness in her heart to go with it. I can't make any better accolades than that.
Amen. Oh, wow. Very good. I think he likes you, Diane.
Wow, that is so amazing. I wish I could say thank you to him, but I know that he's on a cruise someplace.
Well, just shout it out. He'll hear you. You got to go real loud.
I don't know what to say. I just feel like,
wow.
That's
great. Well, Eddie, by the way, folks out there, has his own website, which is www.edrambeau.com, and he spells it R-A-M-B-E-A-U. It's not R-A-M-B-O.
No,
check it out. No, it's not. Check it out, and you'll not only find out more about him, but you'll also see some great photography.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that's his other hobby. Thank you, Eddie.
I just want to say hello to some of my fans that are from other parts of the world, in case they're listening. Speaking of Japan, I want to say hello to Toru Kanu, Sasaki Iseo, Toshiko Suzuki, Sashio Akutsu, and then in Australia, my buddy Yvonne Bartle and David Kilby. Then in Norway, Jan Lustrup and Hans Luder. And then in London, England, my friend Dave Queenan.
Very good.
And I hope they're all listening. I don't know what the time changes are there, so they may not be able to be listening. They might be sleeping or whatever.
I'm glad you said those names, because...
Well, some of them are not easy to pronounce. My father said to me earlier, I read him the list of people I was going to say hello to. He says, you better study those names so you say them right. And I said, okay.
Moving right along, we got so many surprise guests, and our next one is a recording artist you performed with back in 1964. You and he were at a music festival called the Texas Teen Fair, and this is a man with pretty heavy credentials. 19 top 40 hits, including this one, the biggest one of all.
Take good care of my baby. Please don't ever make her blue.
He is, of course, Bobby V. And I asked Bobby what he remembered about the Texas Teen Fair.
Back in 1964, you and Diane were at the Texas Teen Fair. There were different recording acts that appeared on different days. Am I correct?
That's correct. It was a festival, and that it went. It was the Teen Fair of Texas. I was booked on it for 3 days, and I remember when I left, Bobby Rydell came in, and I think he did the last 3 days. And of course, the Rolling Stones were on that on the package. I think at the same time, I know they were when Diane and I were there. It was boiling hot down there. In fact, I went on stage. A couple of us did, in wearing shorts. You know, just wearing regular shorts. It was so hot. But I remember it being a great show. And I worked with Diane several times around that time period. And I just remember what a great singer she was. She was a wonderful singer then. She's an amazing singer now. And she's got a great voice, and she was as sweet as could be. Wonderful performer. Had a great rapport with the audience, and she wore these little blue navy outfits.
Wonder why she did that.
I wonder why she did that. But she was smart looking, and she was elegant then.
Do you remember?
That is amazing.
Was it that?
That is so sweet of him. I remember Bobby V. He was one of the nicest people that I've ever met in the industry. Talk about not having a big ego. He never had one. He was just a real person, easy to talk to, a pleasure to work with, and I love all of his songs. I mean, I used to buy his records before I became a recording artist myself.
So you were a fan.
I grew up listening to him, and it was a great honor for me to be working with Bobby on the same stage.
Was he exaggerating, or was it really that hot?
It was hot. Texas, they have humidity, and it was in the summertime, and it was hot. And let me tell you, I couldn't go put on little shorts like him. I had to wear my whatever I was wearing, you know, dresses or navy outfits. I had to stand on the stage and sweat and act like it didn't bother me.
Before Bobby and I said goodbye, he had this message for you.
Diane, I'm happy to be sharing the airwaves with you once again. I hope that some point in the not-too-distant future we can do some shows together. Ronnie and I have been enjoying chatting about the dynamics of the business, and it's really a male-heavy business. And I know it's tough sometimes for women out on the road, but we're living in a great age right now, musically speaking, because we have all of the abilities to create violin parts and background parts, and I'm looking forward to sometime climbing up on stage and you and I maybe doing a duet or something. Have a great night tonight.
Wow, isn't that nice?
Oh, that is unbelievable.
Diane, you performed with our next guest at the Steel Pier in Atlantic City.
Oh my God.
Now this guy's hits included It Keeps Right On Hurtin' and Dreamy Eyes and Without You and Talk Back Trembling Lips and the biggest one of all,
When I See My Baby, what do I see? Poetry, poetry in motion, poetry in motion, walking by my side, her lovely locomotion
keeps my... Okay, Diane, you know who that guy is?
Absolutely.
JT?
Johnny Tillotson.
Tillotson,
when I
yes.
would hear that song, I think that might have come out before I started.
In 1960. 1960
okay,
was
so
the year for that.
I was just a bebopping kid. I would hear poetry in motion. I'd swing my long ponytail around while I was dancing to his song. I just loved his voice.
It was such a great one.
He's great.
He's a great recording artist. And I asked him, in fact, about the Steel Pier appearances, and here's what he had to say.
It was with Dick Clark. I was fortunate enough to do the Steel Pier a few times, and it would just change. I know the Supremes were on there, Jan and Dean were on the show, and of course Diane Renee, and quite a few others. There's certain things about artists that you recall, and it's how kind they are to their fans, and how much enthusiasm and fun they have in their spirit, and she has all of those qualities. She always has been just a great performer, and a real sweetheart, or as I'd say, a real cutie. Cutie not only physically, but a cutie vocally.
Blessing!
Hey, how you doing, cutie?
My face is as red as my shirt.
If I call you cutie now, are you going to slap me?
No.
Johnny Tillotson did it first. He had a closing thought for you, Diane.
I just want to say, Ronnie, to you and Diane Renee, it was really a pleasure to be on the show. And Diane, I have so many nice memories of when we worked together, and you have a wonderful website, and you're a real cutie. And especially for you, a little kiss on your cute little nose.
Oh, I'm embarrassed.
Oh boy, we got a lot.
He was just a sweet person too. What a great guy,
Johnny Tillotson. His website is www.johnnytillotson.com. I always have to spell these because the names aren't that easy. That is JohnnyTillotson. And Bobby V has a website too, and I neglected to mention it, so he's probably been mad at me for the last few minutes if he's listening into the show. So I'm going to make amends right now. It is www.bobbyv.com, BobbyVee.com. Diane, one of the most enduring oldies of the mid-60s is by a great girl group called The Toys. And this was their huge hit that they had. I love it. There's a good song, A Lover's Concerto by
great
The Toys.
Song.
Remember
that's
that one?
A great song.
Great one. Based on, I believe, a Bach minuet or something. It was,
I think so.
It was.
The melody was from a classical piece.
I understand the Toys. My tie is a little bit tongued.
Okay.
I understand that The Toys did background on some of your recordings.
Yes, they did. I think before they became The Toys, they used to do background singing for Bob Crewe, and I do believe that they were on some of my recordings. I think Kiss Me Sailor. It's hard for me to remember, you know, who was behind me on which song, but I know that they did sing behind some of my things.
Yeah, I know when I Had a Dream, and we're going to play that later in the show.
Okay.
But they were definitely on that one, and in fact, Bob Crew himself was on that one. He was doing a bit of acting, but we'll get to that later. We're going to hear right now what the lead singer of The Toys, Barbara Harris, had to say to you.
So good to see you. I think you're coming back. In fact, I hope you're coming back. That would be so great. We need you. We need that voice. I've listened to some of the cuts from the album, and my husband loves it. Yeah, he says, oh, boy, it sounds so like, you know, in that era. There are not many girl group members out here, and we could certainly use her with that sound.
Wow, a ringing endorsement.
Very sweet of her to say that. No, there aren't too many ladies that are out on the road doing the oldies circuit. I think it's because it's easier for men to, like, live out of a suitcase. All they need is, like, a suit
right. And
a tie or whatever they're going to wear. And
that's true.
They don't have to drag with them all kinds of changes of clothing and accessories and everything. Women have to carry all their makeup and their hair pieces and the this and the that. And,
true.
And it's very, very difficult.
And by the way, Diane, Barbara Harris has her own website, www.barbarastoys.net. Barbara's Toys is one word, Barbarastoys. Now we get to a controversial, you've heard about all the controversy going down with the Dixie Chicks. Of course, that's been very much in the news about that particular controversy. I'm not going to go into the details. You either know it or you don't.
But you know it.
But back in the 60s, I guess sometime in the late 60s, you were very controversial. And back then, you were very, very politically incorrect. You didn't see yourself as being politically incorrect. The song that we're talking about is called Good Day for a Parade,
right.
And the song itself is not controversial at all, but something you did was controversial. So just tell us the story.
Well, after I recorded It's a Good Day for a Parade, I, you know, was thinking, what am I going to wear when I perform this song? Because I had a TV show coming up. So my mother and I went out shopping, and lo and behold, there was a dress that was a flag. It had red and white stripes, and it had on one side of it a blue patch with the white stars. So I said to my mother, oh, my God, this is so perfect to wear for marching in a parade, as if I'm the leader of a band. So then we got a felt top hat, and I bought a baton, and my mother sparkled the top of it. And I had the high white boots, which were in fashion at that time. And I did a TV show singing It's a Good Day for a Parade, dressed like this, and the people that were at the show, that were in the audience of the TV station, all loved it. However, after it was over, I went into my dressing room, and there's a real hard knock at the door, you know, about 10 minutes later, and the producer of the show comes in. He says, you better never wear this dress again. Oh, my God, he said, the phone is ringing off the hook. People are calling in and saying that it's so demeaning to the American flag for you to be dancing around in an American flag. I said, oh, but it's a dress. I said, I didn't mean to offend anybody. He says, get rid of that dress. So, and then he left, and I'm standing there with my mouth open, just about ready to cry, because, you know, my intention was to sing the song and make everybody feel like I was in a parade, you know?
Well, I think it's fair to say, Diane, that that was a good day for a parade, but it was not a good day for Diane Renee.
It was not a good day for me after the show.
Not at all. Well, let's take a listen to that song. Here it is. The controversy continues.
It's such a good day.
There she goes in her...
Oh, yabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba,
yeah,
with the producer yelling at her, get rid of that dress!
And she's wearing her red, white, and navy blue dress, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It was fun, though.
Yes, I'm sure.
I enjoyed the moment that I was singing the song. You
I'm
know,
sure
you around like a majorette. It was fun.
I am sure you had fun. We're having fun tonight. This is a blast, and we're going to move right on. Are you enjoying yourself, Diane?
I'm having a wonderful time. Thank you so much.
You know, Diane, Andy Warhol used to talk about people being famous for 15 minutes.
Right.
Well, this particular guy who is up next, I'm actually not an Einstein when it comes to mathematics, but I took out my trusty calculator, and I figured that our next guest has been famous for a little over 600 minutes. I came up with that by multiplying 15 by 41. And I did that because, you see, this guy became famous for another 15 minutes, or becomes famous, actually, every Halloween.
Oh, my goodness.
Who could this be?
Oh,
my goodness.
I know who this is.
Oh, you think you know? You think you can?
Yes, I do.
We haven't even heard any notes in the song, but you know who he is.
I know. It's Bobby Boris Pickett. Could be anyone else.
Yeah.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. Oh, my monster from his lab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
He did the monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory.
Yes, you are. You are so correct, Diane.
Oh,
it is the one and only Bobby Boris Pickett.
The one and only. Nobody could do that song like he can.
And very few people can do the Boris Karloff voice like he can. That was a tremendous, tremendous recording. And Dr. Demento plays it all the time. My buddy, Dr. Demento, want to say hi to him. He's probably listening to the show because I sent him an email about it. I asked Bobby Pickett about the song, Diane, the Monster Mash. You may be surprised that when Bobby talks about it, he does it in a somewhat normal voice.
Did Monster Mash occur kind of as a joke, or was it something that was well planned?
It was pretty well planned, and it was a joke. It was kind of half and half. What happened was I had been doing Boris Karloff impersonation since I was like 9 years old. And I was singing with a group of four Italian boys from my hometown, which was Somerville, Massachusetts. And we did a tune called Little Darlin' by the Diamonds. We were an a cappella doo-wop group, and in the middle of it, I asked Lenny one night, the leader of the group, I said, let me do this as Boris Karloff, this monologue that the bass baritone does. So I did it, and the audience cracked up. So Lenny said, you know, we ought to do a novelty record. They do well. About a year later, or less than a year, actually, I called Lenny. I said, you know, let's do something. Let's write that song you mentioned. So I went over one Saturday in 1962 to Lenny's house. We sat down at the piano, and in about an hour, it wrote itself. Gary Paxton, who was the only person we knew in the music business. Gary had sang Alley Oop as the Hollywood Argyle, and at that time he was the hottest young producer in Hollywood. He's 19 years old. He produced it about 8 days after we brought it.
For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what it said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you, my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can
monster mash.
Everybody, mash good.
Mash good. Mash good.
Buddy, you can't do one. Probably right. I'm not. I have other talents. I can do Rubik's Cube. But I can't do Boris Karloff. Oh, Diane, that's... You like that, Diane?
That's the greatest novelty song. And, you know, like every Halloween, I mean, Bobby's got a gig. That's good.
It's wonderful to be employed at least part of the year.
He can always count on every Halloween he has a job. Hopefully he's not been only counting on that. I mean, I'm sure he's been working more than that.
I understand he's done some comedy songs, and Dr.
Right.
Demento does play some other recordings. Wouldn't it be nice if Navy Blue could become popular like once a year?
That would be nice.
Maybe the 4th of July?
Well, I don't think that would sort of like mesh, but it would be nice.
I know what happened. The flag dress did it. That was the end.
Flag dress, yeah.
I think
that
finished
it.
Oh, but by the way, Diane, I had to ask Bobby before we parted ways. He said, Ronnie, I hate to cut you short, but I have to leave to meet with some of my vampire friends. But before he did, he had this to say to you.
Hello, darling Diane. It's many years. It seems like centuries since we've seen each other, but I wish you happy Halloweens eternally.
Oh my gosh, that's too funny. I need to tell you something. A couple of days ago, I don't remember who it was, somebody sent me an email and told me that Bobby Boris said that he went out on a date with me, that my mother came along as a chaperone. Now, I don't remember the incident because, you know, I don't remember a lot of things either anymore, but I wouldn't be surprised if I did go someplace with him that my mother would go with me or my father would go with me, because I was never allowed to go anyplace unescorted. If we did go out on this supposed date that this person said we had, I think Bobby was, like, shocked that Mom came along.
You are tuned to 1490 WBCB, Bucks County's best in Fairless Hills, Levittown,
Transylvania.
As they say in the commercial, there are drivers and passengers. Well, in life, there are also leaders and followers.
True.
And our next guest is a follower, or at least she was, back in 1963. At the age of 15, she became the youngest female solo singer ever to hit number one on the national chart. And today, she still holds that distinction.
You are no longer little Peggy March, just Peggy March.
When I signed with RCA, I was 13 and I was 4'10". So I was very small, and Hugo and Luigi, who were my producers, so it was very cute to call me little. I hated it, of course, and, well, I guess the moniker stuck and there's nothing I can do about it, which is fine.
Isn't that a great song?
I used to sing along with the record when I was a kid. This is when I was just starting to record myself. And I had the pleasure of doing some record hops with Peggy March prior to my hit Navy Blue. I had my second single release called Tender. And that's when I met Peggy March, because we're both from Pennsylvania. I'm from Philadelphia, and I'm not sure what part of PA Peggy March was from. But we did do several record hops together during that time. And she
was a
very, very nice, very sweet person. I remember that very easy to talk to, get along with. She did not have an ego. Even though she had a big hit record, she was like a down-to-earth person, which was really great.
And that's the one, by the way, she remembered. She told me that she remembered you singing Tender back at one of those record hops. Yes.
Oh, okay.
You both agree. So that means it's true.
Right. On Tender. Yes.
Absolutely. By the way, I asked Peggy to say something to you, if she had something to say, and she did.
Hey, Diane. Philly is not too far behind. It's still there. It's still a great place, and Lord knows it's the birth, maybe, of what the 60s music was. Great, great town. So from one Philadelphia to another, I wish you continued success.
I just want to say thank you so much, Peggy, and maybe one of these days we might see each other again on a stage.
Peggy March has her own website, www.peggymarch.net. The show you're listening to, and I've only identified it by title at the beginning of the show, so I should probably do it a little bit more. The show is called Diane Renee and Friends, and the reason should be obvious why we're calling it that. These are people that you either performed with and or toured with and or studied with, as in the case of Artie Singer, who was nice enough to call you in live. What a surprise.
That sure was a surprise.
And also people who are personal friends.
Mm-hmm.
And this next gentleman falls into that category. This will bring back memories for many of our listeners. Theme song from the very successful weekly TV series called The Donna Reed Show. Alongside the featured stars, Donna Reed and Carl Betts, our next guest played the role of Jeff Stone on that show, and Shelley Fabre played the role of Mary Stone. Before I bring on Mr. Paul Peterson, let's just take a listen to a little bit of the song that he is most associated with.
He isn't much in the eyes of the world. He'll never make history. No, he isn't much in the eyes of the world, but he is the world to me. My dad. Now here is a man. To me he is everything strong. No, he can't do wrong. My dad.
That is a great song. That's My Dad. And here's what he said about you.
You are a friend of Diane Renee, I understand.
Yes, indeed, I am.
How long have you been friendly with her?
Well, for many, really, decades, when you go back to when we were both performing, because, you know, our paths crossed on the road all the time.
Right.
But the wonderful part of our relationship is that when we show up at these memorabilia shows for record collectors, it's really great fun, because we are both adults. Rather mature adults, shall I say, and of course I am way older than Diane. We get to look back on our careers with a certain kind of fondness that really only can come after some time has passed. Well, I send my love and hugs, as always, to Diane.
That is so sweet. That is. I might have done some other shows during the early years with him, but I'm telling you, you know what, Ronnie?
What's that?
To me, my whole career, except for some isolated moments, is a total blank. I think it was because I was so intense on performing and working to rehearse that everything went by in a flash. And I just don't remember a lot of things.
By the way, Paul Peterson has his own website, www.paulpeterson.com. I better spell this one, because people are going to misspell Peterson. He spells it Paul, P-A-U-L. Peterson is P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N. That E is so, so important. I am talking to... Who am I talking to?
You're talking to me, you remember?
Yes, okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I got to reel you back in, Ronnie.
Oh, goodness. We're going to move along to a man who, well, now, it's not nice, really, to say that a person has a split personality. So I'm not going to say that the guy has a split personality. However, he has had several different musical identities. He had his first hit as both Dickie Do and the Don'ts with this one.
Now the wheels go on.
Remember that, huh? Every
quick buck brings me close to you.
Okay. And then he had his second hit under his own name.
Not for me, please. Not for me, please. Well, you can take that to side, leave it hanging on the rack and bring a sweater back.
Oh, yes. And to prove that he was not just a two-hit wonder... He became a member of a group called the Fireflies, and he sang on this big hit.
You were mine at the time, and the feeling was sublime. You were mine.
You were mine.
You were mine.
You were mine.
You were really, really mine.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that our love was a
great
love.
Great song.
You want me to make the suggestion, Diane? Record that song. Record that song.
I want to do that.
You got to do that one. That's
yeah,
a great
I
one.
I love that song.
Jerry Granahan.
Yes.
And
Jerry Granahan, one of the greatest producers that
yes.
I worked with.
Recently, I had the opportunity to catch up with him. Yeah, he was running away too, but I did catch Jerry. And I did ask him if he had anything to say about working with Diane Renee back in 1967. And this is what this very serious guy said.
I was the head A&R man at the time, and Diane became available. One way or another, we all got together, and at that point, I was so busy with J&E Americans and everybody else, I really didn't want to take on anybody else, but she was so cute and so well-respected and a good little artist. I figured if I could do it with Patty Duke, I could do it with Diane Renee.
That's right. You produced Patty Duke's Don't Just Stand There.
Yeah, so I gladly went in the studio with her, and we did come out with a good record, and either side, either Dynamite or Please Gypsy, could have been the side.
Well, that's true, but what happened? Neither of them really became a side, unfortunately. It didn't become a hit.
No, it didn't.
As good as it was. I mean, that happens sometimes in the business.
Well, you know what? Sometimes when a record company has so many releases on the shelf waiting to go out, they can't be working on everything. I mean, they'll put them all out there. I guess it's like playing dominoes or whatever. You shake it up, throw it out.
Shake
whichever
it up.
Ones start getting the most attention right away, those are the songs that they start
right.
promoting and concentrating on. Unfortunately, my record wasn't getting as much action as they had hoped it was, although I think that the songs that I recorded with Jerry Granahan were some of the best songs that I did record, particularly Please Gypsy is one of my favorite songs.
Okay. I'll tell you what, I was not planning on playing Dynamite, but I might play at least most of it because it's your daughter's, or at least it has been your daughter's.
Well, when my daughter was a little baby and I would play Dynamite, she would jump up and down on the bed, bounce, bounce, bounce,
bounce
every time
bounce.
She'd hear Dynamite,
boom,
boom,
boom.
Boom. Brings back memories of my daughter bouncing up and down on the bed.
We're going to talk about now the side that was actually the A side.
Right.
And it was Please Gypsy. And
right.
You liked this song so much that you named a dog.
I had a little Maltese that I just bought right after I recorded this song, and I named her Gypsy after this song because I just absolutely loved this song, Please Gypsy.
Some of the instrumentation in that sounds a little bit like the instrumentation that you hear on Jay and the Americans records. Did you notice that?
Well, it was produced by the same producer.
That's exactly the point.
They all have their own sound and style. No matter what the song is, they have a flair that comes out in the way they produce their music.
Absolutely.
Which I think is great because it's better to be unique and have a specific style than to sound like everybody else.
Our next guest had a hit back in 1963, which could have been called Two Voices Have I. That's because all of his biggest hits featured his normal voice and his legendary falsetto voice. They included The Gypsy Cried. Oh, Ronnie, stop trying to be this guy. The Gypsy Cried, Two Faces Have I, which is the correct title of the one I just referred to, and this one, the biggest one of all.
Baby, you gotta understand. You're old enough to know the makings of a man. Listen to me, baby, it's hard to settle down. Am I asking too much for you to stick around? Every boy wants a girl he can trust to the very end. Baby, that's you, won't you wait? But till then, when I feel it,
I can't stop, now I can't stop, I love my baby.
biggest hit, Lou, was Lightning Strikes. Did you co-write that song?
Sure, I wrote The Gypsy Crowd and Two Faces of Mine, Rhapsody in the Rain, Lightning Strikes. Well, we always started out with a title. We always liked titles, Twyla and I. Twyla Herbert was the person that I wrote all these songs with. But Lightning was one of those things we had a title, I don't know, for years, and we just loved the title, and then we decided to write a song around it. And that's usually how we started. We sort of worked backwards. We had a title, then we would write the song against the title somehow. We did everything backwards. We usually write the main part, I remember us writing, was light, the hook, which was Lightning Striking Again.
Yeah.
So we had that and then nothing else, so we wrote the song sort of backwards.
The interesting thing about Lightning Strikes is that you never actually sing the words lightning strikes. It's always...
Oh, you got that.
Lightning striking.
That's right.
Lightning striking again.
Exactly.
And by the way, Diane, Lou had something to say about you, which was this.
Well, first of all, I'd just love to congratulate her for sort of hanging in there, and sort of I'm looking forward to, you know, working with her again. And, you know, she came to see me in Las Vegas when I was out there. Frankie Avalon and I played the Orleans out there. And it was just so great to see her again, because she's absolutely a doll baby. And we all thought that, and we all still think you are a doll baby. It was great seeing you again, and congratulations. Everyone's so interested again.
He has his own website, which is www.loucristie.com. That is LOUCHRISTIE. There's something else that Lou Christie is, in addition to having done some shows with you, he's always going to be connected with you, and it also is something that our next guest is connected with you, too. And I'm talking about, well, here is our next guest, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, we're going to tell people in a moment, but right now, see if people remember this great number one song.
See the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long. It wasn't big. I laughed at her and she got mad. The first day that she planted it was just a twig. And honey, I miss you. And I'm being...
That is such a great song. That is Bobby Goldsboro. And that song is Honey. And, of course, you know that song by Anne Honey by Bobby Goldsboro. Okay, now, Bobby Russell wrote that song, by the way. He passed on, but a great songwriter as well. Bobby Russell wrote it for Bobby Goldsboro. If it were not for a miracle that happened back in 1964, there's a good chance that Bobby Goldsboro and Lou Christie... And you, Diane Renee, might not be around today because, that's what we're getting to right now. You and Bobby and Lou will always be tied together to one specific event, which had to be one of the scariest experiences that anyone could ever possibly imagine. Now, I know, Diane, that you're tempted right now to open up and tell the world about what this event was and exactly what happened. However, I'm going to ask you not to do that because a few days ago, I spoke to Bobby Goldsboro. Okay. And I asked him if he remembered every detail of what happened on that fateful night. And this is what he said. Everybody out there, this is a hair-raising story, so fasten your seatbelts.
You were doing a tour back in the 60s, and it was you and Lou Christie and Diane Renee, and you had to go from one stop to another, and there was a disc jockey involved. Could you tell me what your recollection is of that particular plane trip,
yeah,
which was...
I remember it like it happened yesterday, because it's one of the scariest times of my life, and...
okay.
We were going to a record hop. We were going from Pittsburgh to Wheeling, West Virginia, to do a record hop, of all things. We go out to the airport, and the two disc jockeys, one was, I remember, I think it was KDKA in Pittsburgh, and the disc jockeys were Clark Race and Bob Tracy, and Bob Tracy was the pilot. It was his plane, and I thought we were going to drive down to, we're driving out, we come to the airport, I said, oh, we're flying? They said, yeah, we're going to take Bob's plane, and I'm looking at all these big planes out on the runway, I'm thinking, boy, those are nice planes, and I looked over at this little tiny thing sitting, I'm thinking to myself, I'm glad we're not getting on that thing. Well, that's the plane we got on. It had one propeller, and it only had, like, room for four people, and I had to get in the very back of there and just kind of ball up there, because I was so short and skinny anyway, so I just got in that fifth place back there among some blankets, and they said it won't take us but about 45 minutes to fly down there. So the snow is coming down. It's like a blizzard. And I'm thinking, you know, naturally, if I'd had some hits and had better sense, I would have said, I'm not getting on that plane. But I was thinking, hey, I've got my first hit record out, and if I don't get on there, they'll never play my record, I figure. That's the way you think when you've got your first record out.
What record did you have out at that time?
He's a Funny Little Clown. That was like the first really big one I had, and was going up the charts, and I thought, you know, this is something I have to do, you know, so... We get on this plane and we're flying. We'd been up in the air only like 15 or 20 minutes, and I'm sitting in the back of this thing, and the engine noise was so loud I couldn't hear what our pilot was saying, but I could hear what was coming back on his radio. And all I heard was things, something like Red Fox 3 to Blue Fox 2, or there's a plane in trouble up here. And that's all I could hear, so I lean up to Lou and I said, hey, Lou, there's a plane in trouble up here. And Lou turned around. He was white as a sheet. Even in the dark, I could see it. And he said, it's us. And I said, oh, man, don't joke like that. About that time, the plane goes, and it starts, you know, we start losing power, and the engine's cutting off, and all of a sudden, we're dipping down, and we're in total darkness in a blizzard in the mountains of West Virginia. Not a good place to be. So I'm thinking, well, this is it. I finally got my first hit record, and this is the last one I'll ever make, you know. So, I mean, it was really very scary. We're coming down. Actually, the plane, what had happened, I found out later, the oil line or something had burst on the plane, and we had no, I think the oil pressure or something, there was no oil pressure. And our pilot now, here's the pilot, he's hollering, Mayday, Mayday, I don't know what to do, Mayday. And I'm thinking, he's the one flying the plane, and he doesn't know what to do. So what we're trying to do, unbeknownst to me, he was trying to make it to this little airport, a little regional airport between Pittsburgh and Wheeling, and... The plane's coming down under its own power, and he's trying to guide it in, and we're coming in, and it's still dark, and it's snowing, and I can see the lights of the plane flashing on the tops of the trees. That's how close we were to the tops of the trees. I figure we're going to hit any second. I've got blankets up in front of me, and I'm as if that's going to protect me at a, you know, 150 miles an hour hitting a tree. But all of a sudden, I hear Clark Gray said, I see the lights. And we all looked up, and there were some little tiny, it looked like a bunch of flashlights. Somebody was out on the field. And that was the runway. And we came down, and even the flaps weren't working on the plane. And he hit this runway at like twice the speed you're supposed to. We bounced up two or three times and ran out on the ground and missed, you know, off the runway, back on the runway, off the runway, and taxied around until finally the plane stopped right up by this little tiny terminal. And finally the engine cuts off, and it's just total silence. Nobody's moving.
Oh, my God.
You know, we're all like thinking, I don't believe it. So finally this guy comes out, two guys came out from the terminal, and one says, I don't believe you made it down. I said, yeah, I saw the trees. I thought we were going to hit those trees. He said, that's not what I was worried about. He said, that plane should have exploded 10 or 15 minutes ago.
That's just what you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking, what? And to top it off, Bob Tracy, the pilot, says, you know, I think I can get this fixed and we can fly on in, you know, after we get off the plane. And, I mean, I would have killed him if I had to, not to get back on that plane. But we ended up getting, they rented a couple of cars or cabs or something and took us on, and we still did the record hop that night.
When Diane told the story last year, I did a special three-hour show with her last year, and she told the story about when this was happening on the plane. Diane was, she said, I saw my life in my hands. She was extremely nervous, obviously, and she said that Lou Christie was doing Hail Marys. Do you remember Lou Christie doing Hail Marys?
I was behind them, and the engine noise was so loud, I couldn't tell what he was doing. I just know he wasn't saying anything.
Maybe Lou wasn't saying anything then, but he sure had plenty to say when I asked him what he remembered.
Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. And I remember, like, there was smoke, and I thought, why is this smoke? Is this smoke in this, you know, the thing? Well, but anyhow, it was Mayday, and all of a sudden, and they said, you know, they were, over the radio, they said, we're going to have a plane follow you to see where you crash. I said, oh, my God. Well, Diane, at that point, heard that. She was sitting next to me. Bobby was behind us. And he was in the, like, a back rumble seat, wherever in the hell it was, in the back of the plane. I mean, like, he braced, ready to crash.
According to Diane, you were doing some Hail Marys.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. While she was digging her nails into my arm, she had her nails dug into me. I'll never forget it. And I was praying, I think, at the time, doing a lot of Our Fathers and Hail Marys. Because I thought, this is it. I mean, when they said Mayday, and they said, well, just try to make this you know, top of this mountain or something, you know, and the plane would just conk out, you know. It was like we lost all the oil pressure. It just kept going down, and it was like, then it would kick on again, and we'd go a little further, and it would like conk out. I said, oh my God. And we were like just hitting the top of the trees, and we just bounced into this field. It was horrendous.
Maybe it was, but Bobby Goldsboro, being Bobby Goldsboro, had his own unique way of dealing with the situation.
I'm back there trying to make jokes. Well, I remember saying stuff, just trying to keep it, I mean, it's tough to keep the mood light when you're about to crash and end your life, but I was saying things like, well, all our next albums will turn into memorial albums, I guess, and we'll be like the Big Bopper and Patsy Cline and all of them, and, it sounds morbid, but I was trying to, you know, have a little levity there with the situation being like it was, and then I would throw in a few
frogs. Oh my goodness, those were ribbits.
Yeah, I don't think they helped the situation.
Diane, I got to ask you, when he did those ribbits and he was saying that, what was your reaction?
You know what? I was in a state of shock. I didn't cry. I didn't scream. I didn't say anything. I was holding on to Lou Christie's arm for dear life, and maybe I was digging my nails into his arm. And I'm sorry, Lou. I really am. I didn't know I was doing that. I didn't mean to hurt him. But when Bobby was in the back making all of these funny remarks and trying to make light of what was a horrendous situation, I just turned around and screamed at him, "Shut up!" But I'll tell you what, you know, it's a good thing that he was sitting as far back as he was, because I would have bopped him one right over the head. I was so flipped out.
Well, I'll tell you something, Diane. I got to tell you, it's amusing. Well, I don't know what to say amusing. It's amazing, actually. Ironic. While Bobby Goldsboro was cracking all those jokes, he was riding high on the chart with this record called
See the Funny Little Clown, see him laughing as you walk by. Everybody thinks he's happy 'cause you never see a tear in his eye.
What a clown he was.
Yeah, he was the funny little clown back there. Okay, Diane, there's a loose end I needed to tie up, so I asked Lou Christie,
do you still have her nail prints?
No, I don't. I think they've spent a few years.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we are WBCB 1490 AM, Fairless Hills, Levittown, Pennsylvania. We're going to move on to a lady right now who is both a sad person and a happy person. First, you may recall that sad movies made her cry, and then she became happy when this guy came into her life. Unfortunately, folks, that relationship obviously didn't work out, because when push came to shove, she was asking James to hold the ladder steady. Anyway, Diane, who is she, and what is your connection?
The one and only lovely lady, Sue Thompson.
Absolutely.
And let me tell you, when Norman came out, I would sing along with her record, and I just sang it over and over and over again. Norman, Norman, Norman. I mean, all through the house, my parents would hear me be singing Norman, Norman, Norman with Sue Thompson's record. Such a very sweet, she's very small and petite in size. Actually, she's not any taller than me, which is amazing because everyone's taller than me. I'm just 5 feet tall, and I'm small, so it's like everyone's always taller than me. And I think that Sue is probably around, maybe, if she is taller than me, maybe by an inch. You know, a very petite, lovely lady.
Sue Thompson had this to say.
Diane, this is Sue Thompson, and I'm so pleased to be on your show, and I want you to know that I wish you all the luck in the world, and I know that people around the world are going to be just sitting back and enjoying this particular venture that you're doing right now. I love it, and I love you, and I wish you lots of luck. I love your CD, and it should be very, very popular. All the songs are really good, and you sound so sweet. Lots of luck from Sue Thompson, okay, honey?
Like I said, she's such a gracious,
tremendous,
lovely lady, and I feel very honored to have met her and spent some time with her at that show.
Say, Diane, are you going to tell me the title of the next one we're going to play?
Maybe.
Well, I really want to know. Are you going to tell me the title of the next one we're going to play?
Maybe.
Who's on first? What's on second? Maybe is a song that was originally done by the Chantels.
Right.
Who produced your recording of it?
I worked with Richie Rome in Philadelphia, and we recorded it in 1981. I guess you would say that we produced it together.
Well, here it is. This is called Maybe, and it's Diane Renee. Can I be in your backing group?
You want to be my backup singer? That was a fun song to do. I always loved the Chantels version of Maybe. And when I was getting ready to do this session, I just wanted to pick out one song that was, let's say, a rock classic. And to me, I think Maybe is a rock and roll classic.
Certainly is. And you certainly do justice to that song. Terry Fisher balled in with a greeting. She's the Mermaid, a lead singer of the Mermaids. We had them on last month with a special show. So let's hear what Terry had to say to you.
Diane, the best of luck in your new old career, or is it your old new career? I'm not sure which. But anyway, I'm so looking forward to getting together with you, Diane. Really, really look forward to that, meeting you and actually working together. And I know it'll happen sometime soon in the future.
Right, and Terry has had some preliminary discussions with you, so hopefully that's going to happen, that you might be working the oldie circuit with her.
Very possible. We've talked about putting together a little show between the Three Mermaids and myself, because being a single artist, when you go out and you don't have your backup singers and you're there on the stage with just the music but not the shoo-op and la-las, it's
which are important. That's very important.
Very important.
Very important to have that.
And Terry said to me that the Mermaids would love to be doing some of my backup singing, and we'll put together a little show.
That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two days ago, I talked to Dee Dee Sharp. And she said that she wanted to give a personal greeting for you. Dee Dee Sharp did some shows with you.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what she said.
Hi, girlfriend. It's good to know that you're still around, healthy, kicking, and well. Of course, none of this would be going on if we both didn't have God's blessing. So I really wish you a lot of luck on the new endeavor. And come on out and join us. We can use some more girls out here. Especially ones that can sing. Bye.
she was in a good mood.
Yeah, she was.
She was a great person.
I did a lot of record hops with Dee Dee because she was from Philadelphia. We had a lot of record hop experience together.
Well, I want to point out that I didn't mention the Mermaids did Popsicles and Icicles. I'm not sure I mentioned that. Dee Dee Sharp had a lot of hits like Mashed Potato Time and Gravy and Ride and a lot of great records on Cameo Records.
Right.
And finally, our final guest star of the ones that we announced in advance is Charlie Gracie, and he found out about the show through his son, who has been emailing you from time to time. You've been communicating.
Right, right.
And Charlie Gracie said that his dad wanted to say a personal greeting. Charlie Gracie Sr., that is, had a big number one hit with a song called Butterfly back in 1957. It was a really great one. And he had this to say to you.
Diane, Renee, this is Charlie Gracie, an old mate of yours from the late 50s, early 60s, and I want to congratulate you for coming back into the business. You're a great talent. You deserve everything good that comes your way, and I want you to know that you have great support from the Gracie family and all your millions of fans around the country. Good luck and God bless.
That's really nice, isn't it?
Oh, that's incredible.
We're going to have, hopefully, a very special surprise guest coming up.
I don't know if I can take any more.
I don't know if you can, but I want
to
just...
this is like, I feel so honored to have all of these renowned artists that are so wonderful. I mean, to come on the show just to say hello to me, it's like, I feel so honored.
Blanket thank you to everybody here. We're going to hear a little bit. I don't know if we're going to be able to play this the whole way through because we have a surprise guest. But this is a song you did with Phil Hurt, your record producer. And I'm going to play it. As you're telling the story, I'm going to play a little bit of it under your voice because it has like a long instrumental opening, The Gift of Love. So can you just describe a little bit about this particular wonderful, wonderful song?
The Gift of Love, I recorded this in 1982 in Philadelphia. And Phil Hurt and Ann Clark wrote this song just for me, and Phil is singing the duet with me. And it was during the early 80s that we were trying to get me a record contract again, and I love this song. It's just beautiful.
It is, and it's sung beautifully by you and Phil Hurt.
Yes.
We're going to hear a little bit of it.
He's singing duet with me.
Beautiful. Let's listen.
No one dares try to compare.
Beautiful. What can I say?
Thank you.
Those out there want to hear the entire song, buy the CD, because there's not only that song, there's so many other beautiful songs on that double CD. It's wonderful, Diane.
Thank you so much.
I know it's coming up, and I am so excited. I can hardly contain myself, Diane.
Slow down.
Let me just do something. Let me just make sure that we have all the controls correct. Okay. All right. Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Yes, I'm sitting down. But will I fall off the chair?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out. You let me know.
Should I lay down?
Diane, I am going to play Name That Tune with you. Or actually,
okay.
I'm going to say Name That Recording Artist. I am going to play a tune. You might be familiar with the tune,
okay,
but I'm not sure if you're familiar with who is singing this, so let's take a listen.
All right.
To the tables down at Morris, to the place where Louis dwells, to the dear old Temple Bar we love so well. Sing the whip and poops assembled, with their glasses raised on high, and the magic of their singing cast a spell. Yes.
Who is it? Who is that singing?
I can't believe it. Don't tell me.
Well, you got to tell me. I asked you.
Is he going to be here on the show?
Well, I actually talked to him a few days ago on the phone. I tracked him down. This is a man who hardly ever does radio interviews.
Never.
He is a legend. Okay, who is the man I'm talking about? Who is he?
Drum roll. None other than my most famous loved record producer, Bob Crew.
You got it. That's who it is.
Great.
And we talked, Diane, the other day. I want you to hear what Bob Crew had to say about you.
The single session was kind of fun, and Navy Blues, you know, it was like it was the most natural thing we'd ever recorded. It just happened. Artie Butler was playing piano and just loving it and having a great time.
To get the Navy Blue LP recorded was like a 48-hour session, like nonstop. One thing that amazes me when Diane Renee tells me the story is that she was able to learn songs so quick, almost instantaneously.
Yes.
Is this one of the things that you saw in Diane as a special thing?
Well, yeah, and when I said that she could double her voice, she was an amazing, almost like she had the ability to recall every single move she makes with her voice. So that sometimes, I swear to you, I would say, Diane, aren't you going to sing on this one? She says, I am. And you look at both the meters, and they're both exactly in the same place. But they're exactly on top of one another, which is very difficult. She had an incredible ear.
What do you think? Are you overwhelmed?
Were you overwhelmed.
Were you sitting down? Did you fall off the chair?
No, I'm on the floor.
Oh. Are you on the floor right now?
I'm sitting on the floor because I didn't want to fall off the chair.
I cannot tell you how grateful I am that Bob Crew agreed to pre-record that with me. That is just something.
That is incredible, because he doesn't do stuff like this.
Diane, we're going to play a record right now, which happens to be the very first one that Bob Crew ever produced for you. And
yes.
What was the song called? And I know you have a special dedication on this one.
Yes. This was a beautiful song written for me by Bob Crew, and I believe because I'm not 100% sure, but he was there. Sid Bass, who wrote We'll Sing in the Sunshine for Gail Garnett. I believe that Bob Crew wrote Tender for me with Sid Bass, and it was my first Bob Crew record release and my first experience working with Bob Crew, and I want to dedicate this song to my biggest U.S. fan, Wesley Smith. Love you, Wesley.
record went out to your biggest fan in the United States?
Yes, it did. Wesley Smith.
That one was for you.
Yes,
and a
it
great
was.
One. Produced by Mr. Bob Crewe. Now, I need to make a slight technical adjustment here.
Okay.
So hang on. I have a mystery guest coming up momentarily. Is there a mystery man on the phone?
If I'm called a mystery, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Am I a mystery?
Oh, my gosh. Is that Bob Crewe?
It's that Diane Renee.
Oh, my God, I love you.
I love you.
Oh, my God, I can't believe this. This is too much. We're on a radio show together after all these years. This is incredible.
Are we on the air right now?
Yes, we are. Oh, I should have told you.
Be careful what you say, Bob.
Be careful.
Be careful.
Your words go down in history.
Okay, I have to get back to my script here, because I was so overwhelmed when I found out that you might be doing this show. It's certainly a distinct honor and a privilege for me, Bob, to have you on the show. There are many of our listeners who may not be aware of this, Bob, but the vast amount of hit recordings that you've produced over the years, starting back in 1957, I believe it was. Is that the first one, Silhouettes?
Well, Silhouettes would be the first real big...
The real big hit I'm talking about, okay?
Yeah.
And that was produced with your partner, Frank Slay.
Frank Slay.
And to very quickly bring all of our listeners up to date, I spend a few hours putting together a brief montage consisting of many of your most successful recordings. I couldn't possibly, Bob, include all of them. There are too many. But this is a representative sample. Bob Crewe, this is your musical life.
Within a dim light cast, two silhouettes on the shade. La-di-da, oh boy, let's go. Cha-cha-cha, lucky ladybug. She's a talented lassie, down in FLA, way down yonder in Orleans.
Fortunate to be one of your artists to have.
Oh, I was fortunate to have you.
You what?
I was the fortunate one to have your talent to work with.
Well, I thank you for that. I really thank you for that. And you know what? Just knowing you is an honor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I have loved you all my life, truly.
Well, the same is true for me.
Oh, can I pop in here?
No, you can't.
And Ronnie,
yeah.
We now love you too.
Oh,
it was really quite overwhelming in a way. You know, it's an amazing thing. Like six or seven or eight bars of
I know
song, and it's just incredible. Navy blue shone like a wild, wonderful bird.
You know, it was interesting as I was putting together that little medley. Some of the songs actually seemed to flow into one another, like the "Sock It to Me, Baby." Went right into the "Sock It to Me, Baby" song, and some of them were just like logical progressions. But again, I point out to our listeners, that's only a fraction of the recordings, Bob, that you have done over the years. I have respected and admired you, and Diane and you are going to kind of reminisce about a few of the songs. We just mentioned "Tender," the first one that you produced, and there was a recording that was produced after a few others came out, you know, "Navy Blue," "Kiss Me Sailor," and "Growing Up Too Fast." A great one, one of my favorites, called "Watch Out, Sally."
That was one of my favorites,
That was
too.
My favorite.
And I think, Diane, yeah, I was going to say, but you agree. Yeah,
yes,
we had fun doing that.
We had a lot of fun doing that song.
Uh-huh. It was like putting together a mini movie.
Right.
You
actually,
know?
what we were doing was we were trying to change my image, I think, because we were trying to take this sweet girl next door, you know, from the Navy Blue girl, to make her a rough, tough, watch out Sally motorcycle chick.
Yeah.
So,
you handled it. No, you jumped into the role beautifully, I thought, and we certainly did have fun making it. We were kind of rebel without a cause kind of attitude.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I agree.
Diane, I saw a picture that actually you emailed me a picture once of you at the Watch Out Sally session, and you really looked pretty tough.
Yeah, I did.
You mean that tough like wow.
She
tough
was
like
not
wow.
Yeah, she was not the sweet, demure little Navy Blue girl next door. She was rough, tough. Diane, Renee, and any rate, we're going to listen to that song right now, and we all agree, it's up there.
Yeah.
question to ask you, Ro. What are you saying at the end of that record? What, ride, baby, ride? What are you
fly,
saying?
Fly, baby, fly. Ride, baby, go, go, go. Burn, baby, burn. Like burning up rubber, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was great. This is Ronnie Allen, and I'm living a dream right now. I'm dreaming that I am talking on the phone live for the World Wide Web with Diane Renee and Bob Crew.
Can you believe how she handles those lyrics? I mean, she really chews them up and spits them out.
Sheesh. Yeah. Didn't Frank Sinatra do something like that in That's Life? He chewed it up and he spit it out in That's Life?
That's life.
Well, now we're going to get to Bob Crew's Academy Award winning performance as the preacher in the record.
Yes, we had a dream. I had a dream, okay? Now, I had a dream. Okay, Bob Crew, you played the preacher.
Well, I know, but I didn't know that I got an Academy Award for it.
At the end of the song, I hit an incredibly high note that I don't know how I ever got up there, but it's quite an interesting song. I had a dream.
Well,
we had fun with this one.
Yeah, let me just clarify it, Bob. You got an Academy Award in my mind.
Oh, in your mind.
That's what it is.
You did a good job.
Absolutely. But this is... Now, the toys are doing backing on this, aren't they, Diane, I believe?
I'm not sure who was singing in the background.
Before I play it, there's one story that you got to tell people about how Bob Crew, when you were recording this song, there's a big high note at the end.
Well, I used to hit a lot of, like, one high notes on some of my recordings, and I don't know if you remember, Bob, but there was a lot of tension as I was getting closer and closer to the note, and I would always see you behind the glass, you know, in front of the board, and leaning more forward as I'm getting to the note, and you took your right hand with the pointer finger, and you're looking at me, and your hand is going up higher and higher because you want me to get ready to hit it.
Yeah.
So when I would go to the high note, your arm would go straight up in the air with your pointer finger. It's something that I never forgot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember. No, but I do remember.
We should have had it on tape.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
But Bob, I keep trying to explain to Diane, you were not really doing that to tell her to hit the high note. You were just saying, you're number one, Diane.
Exactly.
With that finger that was saying, you're number one.
Yeah.
All right, here it is, bringing back memories. Great sound.
We were walking down the aisle of love. You
Ramona, you better call the program director because what happened was Diane just shattered a few windows in the studio here. And now they're going to call. Oh, I'm responsible because I played this record.
You know, people ask me, like, how did you ever hit that note? And I say, I don't know.
That's incredible.
I was thinking about this high note thing. Bob, if you pointed toward the ground, would she hit low notes?
Well, it depended on what we were going for, but obviously she was trying to fly into the sky, and she did.
I would love to, Diane. Do you have any low notes in you? Real low notes, or are you just mostly
know.
A high voice singer?
I don't know. I mean, my voice has my octaves have broadened since I got older because I can hit a lot of low notes that I never could when I was young. So I have the high range, but now I have a lot more lower range.
Well, that's great.
It is. This is Ronnie Allen, and I'm on WBCB exclusively. Was it something I said?
That's my dog.
Oh, well, let's put it. What's his name?
Seti. S-E-T-I. Seti.
Seti. Hello, Seti. Is the dog a friendly dog?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's beautiful. I saw him. He's like one of these Egyptian-looking dogs with the ears
that
stand
up.
Ladies and gentlemen, not only does Bob Crew do a very rare radio interview, but you actually are hearing his dog on the air, too.
Yeah, he's a singing dog.
A singing dog.
He wants to get in on the act. What's the matter?
Exactly.
Bob, I want to know, are you going to produce the dog on a record?
Well, I don't know. We have to see. We'll talk about it, Diane.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Diane, and I don't know if you're going to be able to meet the dog's terms, but all right, we're going to talk about. Are we going to talk about Diane right now? Diane and you. This is kind of a goof. Now, this the way you sang this, it might be called "Teach Me Tonight." What the title of the song is, because this was a thing. You were at the end of a recording session or something, and you decided to do something together just for fun.
I guess we always wanted to do something. It remains in my memory as a dream, actually. Like, it never happened, but obviously it did. Diane has it on tape.
Yeah, you know what I remember? It was like we had a little bit of studio time left, and we were all very tired and very punchy at that point. And Bob and I, we just got together, and you said to me, "Come on, Diane, let's do a song together." And we did "Teach Me Tonight."
Well, what's incredible? Well, now
a great song.
But actually, before you do a song, there usually is an arrangement.
Here's what happened. I was supposed to sing the song by myself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And at the last minute, it was not intended for Bob to sing the song with me, but he decided that he wanted to do a duet. So, and we went into the isolation booth. And they played music, and we had a good time.
but you didn't remember the title until Bob came up with it at the end of the record.
No, I think we remember. We were teasing.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Right.
Okay, so you knew what it was you were singing. Okay, well, let's take a listen to it right now. This is just for fun, ladies and gentlemen, but it's on your double CD.
Yes, it is.
Track 16 on CD1, and it's called Teach Me Tonight. Here it is.
the title. Thank you. Diane learned it there. Very good. I actually like that a lot.
I like it. I don't like the note I hit in the middle there, Diane. I don't know how you let that one get out of the book.
I think it was my note.
No, it was me.
Was it you?
Myself and my sour note.
Well, you
were never off key.
I thought it was me. I thought I went off.
Wait a minute. How about any note you can hit? I could hit worse, sir. I can hit any note worse than you.
You know what? It was just, I put it on the CD because I just thought, even with the bad note, you know, we were having fun together.
Oh, that was
that I just want everybody to enjoy it.
It was obviously a fun session, but Bob thought he was dreaming it all these years.
I don't have a copy of that. I don't remember.
I took it off of an acetate dub.
Right.
I see.
You know what else I have of you singing on? When you wanted me to learn Please Forget Me for my Native You album.
Yeah.
I have an acetate dub of you singing Please Forget Me.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Well,
that's
please.
How I learned it, from your performance.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
I do. Oh, I went rummaging through a lot of stuff before I put the CD together, the things that I found. It was quite a job, but I'm glad that I did it.
Wait a minute. Are there any more buried treasures that Bob doesn't know about that you might be...
I don't think so.
I don't want to ever hear that demo with me singing. No way.
Well, the fact is...
Oh, I have it.
Wait a minute. The fact is, though, if you're singing together and one person hits a note that's not quite right, doesn't the other person have to kind of follow along or something?
I lead you
into the darkness.
Yep.
Switch off the light.
Well, you know, I feel that I'm going to be pinched and I'm going to wake up from this, because to me this is really a dream. It is such an honor and a pleasure and a privilege, Bob, to have you on the show here along with Diane Renee. And I can't thank you enough for agreeing to surprise her and the world. But you have been the mystery guest. I told people I had a top secret guest, and no matter what they did, no matter how much money they offered me, I wouldn't tell who it was, and I kept my word.
Ah, you're wonderful.
I, of course, eventually told you that you were going to be the guest.
Yes, I was the keeper of the secret.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, now, it is no longer a secret, certainly to all of the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people around the world who have visited Diane's website, that she did a remake of Navy Blue, and Bob...
I love that record, by the way.
Yeah, I mean the remake.
The remake, yes.
You were at the session.
Record. I was there.
You were there.
Yeah.
And
David was conducting.
David Lasley was producing, and Bob came to the studio, and he was there on... And in the liner notes on the new CD, there's a little photograph of me with Bob at that session.
That
is tremendous. Well, we're going to play Navy Blue.
1987.
Right, and here it is, a little dance mix, a little bit different.
gentlemen, now stand by, because I think we're going to hear from Rappin' Renee. Here she is. Okay. Bob, I agree. I love what she did with Navy Blue.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Tremendous.
I love it.
It was so much fun, that session. Not only did I have Bob stop by for the session, but my daughter flew in from back east to be at the session with me. And
that was incredible. I mean,
and an old boyfriend of mine who used to be a movie actor, he came by to the studio with his son. A little boy, and it was like sort of a reunion. It was just incredible, the whole thing, you know.
Well, we have Bob Crewe as our very, very special guest, Diane, and if it's okay with you, before we play our closing song, Bob, could you pick a track from the Navy Blue LP that you particularly would like me to play, and we'll just throw a little of it on. It'll be your choice.
Oh, my God. Well, of course.
Boy, do I put you on the spot.
you did. You didn't even tell me you were going to do this.
Well,
but
I do surprising things on the air. I like to surprise
really
people.
You really do.
Oh, no.
What do you like?
Play Please Forget Me.
Oh,
okay.
The song that I have you singing a dub, I learned it from. Please Forget Me.
Please really? Forget Me?
All right.
Forget me. Yeah.
tell you, that definitely has some four seasons.
I think you and I spoke about...
Oh, okay, that's true. I may have mentioned it then. But you
didn't mention this song, and you're right.
Yeah. That was part of your trademark. That's a Bob Crew trademark, actually.
I don't know about that, but I do know that Diane really was handling this thing beautifully.
Diane told me something that you did something with was it a board and a floor or something to make a sound in in one of the songs, Diane? You remember what I'm talking about?
Well, the floor.
What did you do with the floor? It was like a loose piece of flooring or
yeah.
something.
Stay Phillips Studio.
Stay Phillips. Yeah.
Yes. There was a loose block in the floor.
Uh-huh.
And you put the microphone down to the floor. I don't remember which Four Seasons song it was, but you had me stamping with you.
Oh yeah.
We were dancing, like doing the stomping on this wooden block that was loose, which gave you the sound.
Oh yeah, it was
on all the Four Seasons songs.
Right.
There was only one block that was loose. And
everybody should come into the studio and say, "Where's that block?
Where is that block?"
It's amazing. It's amazing how some sounds that become very well known happen by accident initially.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tremendous thing. Well, I have to tell you that this has been such a joy for me, Bob. I really can't thank you enough, but I can try. I could just say from the bottom of my heart, you have my total appreciation for agreeing to do it.
Well, thank you for having me on with my favorite singer.
And we have one
from the 60s, Diane Reneh. She's just absolutely incredible.
Diane.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Okay. That's so sweet.
We're going to close right now with, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we have to close the show. We're actually going to probably go a couple of minutes over. But Diane, I want you to tell the story of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is the last track on your double CD, which is called Something's Old and Something's New, and it's available on your website, www.dianerenee.com. Before you tell the story, Bob Crew, once again, thank you.
Thank you.
And Diane, you're welcome. And Diane, we'll let you close with the story.
Okay. I moved out to Las Vegas in 1985 from the East Coast after I was divorced, and I brought my then 12 or 13-year-old daughter with me, and she didn't like it, so she only stayed here 2 months, and she went back east to go back to school and live with her dad on the East Coast. One day, I get in the mail a cassette with my daughter singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and I started to cry immediately as soon as I heard it, and I couldn't even listen to the whole song. It was during the 80s, and during that time, there were all these make-your-own record booths popping up all over the country in shopping malls, and that's where she made this one. Well, when I was in L.A. to make the 1987 version of Navy Blue, I was in the Beverly Mall with my aunt. We were just walking through, and there was one of these make-your-own recording booths, and I said to my aunt, "Would you mind if I go take a look at the menu of song tracks?" Because they were all pre-recorded musical tracks with no vocals on them that you could choose from and go in there and sing. Of course, you couldn't pick the key that you wanted to sing, and whatever it was, that's what you had to sing to. So there it was, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So I said to my aunt, "Would you mind being out here? I have to make this song for Heather because she sent it to me, and I just want to make it and send it back to her." So I went in. I heard the music track once. I did a rehearsal through once, and already I was getting choked up just doing the rehearsal because of the feelings I was having of missing her. And then I said to the engineer through the mic, I said, "Okay, let's go for a take." He says, "Are you sure? You only practiced once. You have as much time as you want to take on this." And I said, no, I'll never get through singing this song again. If I can't get it on the first take, I'm not going to be able to sing it. Well, he didn't understand what was going on in my mind or why it was going to be a problem for me, but he rolled the tape, and I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, one take, and that was it. So they gave me a couple of copies of my recording that I took home with me, one of which I sent to my daughter, of course, and the other one I had for myself, and it came out so well that I decided to put it as the last song on my new double CD, and I dedicate this song to my wonderful, lovely, beautiful, one and only daughter that I love more than anyone else in the world, Heather.